Well, the clock says it's time to close now. I guess I'd better go now. I'd really like to stay here all night. The cars crawl past, all stuffed with eyes. Street lights share their hollow glow. Your brain seems bruised with numb surprise. Still one place to go. Still one place to go. Let me sleep all night in your soul kitchen. Warm my mind near your gentle stove. Turn me out and I'll wander, baby, stumbling in the neon grove. With your fingers weave quick minarets, speak in secret alphabets. I light another cigarette. Learn to forget. Learn to forget. Learn to forget. Learn to forget. Let me sleep all night in your soul kitchen. Warm my mind near your gentle stove. Turn me out and I'll wander, baby, stumbling in the neon grove. Well, the clock says it's time to close now. I know I have to go now. I really want to stay here all night. All night. All night. Hello, everyone. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's listener-supported radio, and they deserve your support. They put on two streams of music and talk shows and all kinds of stuff just about 24/7, and it's a great listener-supported network. So head on over to freedomslips.com or revolution.radio. Find that donation button and use it. I am proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. And I'm going to have to apologize right off the bat tonight for my voice and for every time that I'm going to sneeze right into the microphone. But let's get started. Tonight we welcome these special guests, Phil Ferrugio, Frank Cordero, Jim Fetzer, Thomas Wertman, and Richard Flamer. Welcome back, Richard. And so this Thursday evening we're gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, in Port Orange, in Des Moines, Iowa, in northern Minnesota, in Madison, Wisconsin, in Cleveland, Ohio, and in San Cristobal de las Casas, Chiapas, Mexico, and wherever you are. My recommended list. Number one, M.K. Davis discusses the true story behind the Patterson-Gimlin Bigfoot film, in which M.K. explains that the authenticity of the film is not in question, but what people do not know is that something terrible happened that day in 1967. Some men, being paid by a lumber company, murdered several Sasquatch. That story has not been told to a wide audience. M.K. Davis has been researching this for years. Find this video at YouTube, and the channel name is Green Wave 2010FB. You can also look for the Davis Report. Also recommended, number two, go to jamesfetzer.org and see Jim Fetzer's explanation of his defense against the lawsuit filed against him by Lenny Posner, alleged parent of an alleged victim in the alleged shooting at Sandy Hook School in 2012, jamesfetzer.org. Also recommended, number three, the nuclear resistor, nukeresistor.org. Some recent headlines: 5 activists arrested for bannering on Supreme Court steps as part of Stop Torture protest. 4 arrests at Pentagon during Holy Innocence Witness. Update on the Kings Bay plowshares. Protests and arrests at arms fairs in Belgium and New Zealand. NukeResister.org. Also recommended Common Dreams and Democracy Now! All sorts of important issues addressed every day, such as William Arkin on Homeland Security's creeping fascism, New York City Mayor, City will guarantee health care for all New Yorkers, Trump delivers error-filled border security address to nation, Trump nomination of Wheeler ensures EPA will continue to put profits of polluters over human health and planet. All this and much more at Democracy Now! And Common Dreams. And of course, we have to continue to point out that these two outstanding websites will have nothing to do with reporting the truth about 9/11, Boston, Sandy Hook, Oklahoma City, etc., etc. And just as with Jon Stewart and Comedy Central, we have to ask, is this because they have studied the evidence, rolled it around in their hands, and found it wanting? Or is it because they are so, so afraid? Because we have come to understand that since 1963 and even before, we have lived in a state, a nation, a republic ruled by deception. We understand. We understand that any newspaper publisher, magazine editor, radio show host, TV news host who persists in still telling us that Osama bin Laden was buried at sea, who still tells us that the plane in Shanksville disappeared into that little hole in the ground, who still tells us that Lee Harvey Oswald killed John Kennedy, that James Earl Ray killed Martin King, and that Robert Kennedy was murdered by Sirhan Sirhan. Well, they deserve nothing but, they have earned nothing but, our convulsive, doubled-over laughter. Find an alternative in Penn Magazine. The January issue is now available. Jim Fetzer versus the Deep State. Penn Magazine is PENNmagazine.us.
Our first guest of the evening is Philip Ferrugio. Phil joins us each week from Port Orange, Florida. Phil also has his own radio show called It's the Empire Stupid, which is the same name as his column on our show. And we're very happy to have Phil on the show. He publishes things all over the internet, and we're lucky to have him. And here we go with It's the Empire Stupid.
Good evening, working stiffs. She works hard for the money. You know, Donna Summer had a big hit back in the 70s. She works hard for the money, so hard for it, honey. She works hard for the money, so you better treat her right. Well, she's just turned 30, has 3 children, receives no welfare except SSI for her Down syndrome daughter. No food stamps anymore. She earns too much at $24,000 a year to get much of it. She can get a little, but she doesn't want to hassle with all the paperwork and the garbage that they put her through. She has absolutely no health coverage for herself. Her kids are on Medicaid. And like the Donna Summer song, works hard for the money. Vanessa M., born and raised by 2 military parents, went to college, made some foolish decisions by her own account of falling into 2 love-hate relationships. The only upside was bearing 3 wonderful children. She's a single mom and survives by having to work 3 part-time jobs. A server in a coffee shop. B, a housekeeper in a major golf club at $10 an hour. And her best future prospect as an occupational therapist assistant, where she gets $30 a visit, but is strictly an independent contractor with no steady hours. All told, Vanessa M. works on a good week when she is needed 50 hours in total. She says, when I was not working and going to school for the occupational therapist assistant course, I was able to get over $700 a month in food stamps for the 4 of us. As I got more work, it dwindled down to what I could get now, which is about $150 or so a month. Problem is, they want me to jump through hoops with forms, and they want to have your email address, phone records, and records of all my spending. It's just not worth it. Vanessa M. was recently lucky to have found a better source of housing for the 4 of them. She says You know, I met a nice lady who just purchased a home in a decent part in this area. She was having trouble paying her mortgage, so she offered me the opportunity to share her large home. We have two bedrooms, a kitchen, living room, and bathroom for ourselves, and I pay her $1,000 a month, which includes all extra charges like water, electric, and cable. I have to pay my own cell phone and what goes with it, which costs me over $150 a month. Then I have my car insurance and, of course, gasoline costs, which for me is quite a lot, as I'm always driving to all my jobs. If I am able to scrimp a bit, shopping in stores like Walmart for groceries, that cost me about $130 a week or so. Then I have the clothing, but for myself and the kids, but I'm forced to shop in thrift stores and thankfully receive lots of hand-me-downs from various people for my kids. If they get sick, well, luckily I can take them to whatever urgent care accepts Medicaid. If I get sick, watch out for that. Vanessa M. told me of her recent experience living elsewhere. She says, I was able to get a rather large apartment in a pretty downtrodden, extremely low-income area of Daytona Beach, Florida. I paid $1,050 a month and had plenty of room for us, but most of the street was absentee landlord rentals using management companies, including my own house that I was in. Soon after we moved in, I could notice that the house had terrible termite problems with lots of damage in the wood structure. All the management company did was just to paint over the damage. That was bad enough, but when one night while laying in bed, I heard weird noises from inside the walls. Then I could hear the stampede running around. When in the morning I pushed back the dresser, I could see rat crap droppings inside of the drawers and along the wall. I immediately called the management company, and they said they would send out a pest company. Well, what they did was send out a slew of pest companies to inspect the place just to give quotes. By the third one coming out and having all the guys telling me, lady, you got giant rat infestation, and still no one coming to deal with the problem, I ran the hell out of there with my kids. After I was out of there, the management company wanted me to pay $800 for breaking my lease. I told them they already had my security deposit and my 1 month rent in reserve, so I told them, sue me. They never did. You know, folks, it's quite hard to fathom how a person, especially a woman in today's still man-dominated society, is able to support three children, work long hours, and keep above water. Vanessa M has some ideas as to make this life journey a bit more tolerable for her and literally millions of single moms. Well, if we had reasonable minimum wage, let's say $15 an hour, that would help. If we all had the same health care that the Canadians and English have with no little charges, that would be unreal. I just wish that there were no absentee landlords and rental apartments were owned and operated by the local towns instead. Maybe rents would be much easier for people like myself. She also mentioned, which was interesting, that when she had to have a tooth pulled because she had an infection, she couldn't afford the $300 to go to a dentist and have the dentist pull it out. And thankfully, the lady she was living with now said, I'll pay for it. And that's how she got a tooth pulled. So as my dear old union and peace activist pal Walter Young always put it, enough said. Thank you, folks.
And now we join in progress another episode of The Americans. The Americans is sponsored this week by Operation Northwoods Deodorant. It hangs in the air long after you're gone. The Americans is also sponsored this week by Gravitas Cologne. If you are what you are, then you ain't what you ain't. Get some Gravitas Cologne today and at least smell like you mean business. Sponsored by the National Intelligence Agency, Combating Stupidity. And also by Go Your Own Way Compasses for Republicans, as well as I Think We're Alone Now Personal Computers for Americans. The Americans is also brought to us by Razor Wire Dental Floss. It's good for you, really. Crisis Actors of the Homeland. Operation Mockingbird, Operation Northwoods, COINTELPRO, and by Kraft and Blackwater, bringing you Aurora, Tucson, Orlando, the Boston bombing, Sandy Hook, San Bernardino, and so much more. The Americans dream of marshmallow clouds and lollipop lanes and TV towns, while the world wails, fists clenched, tears streaming. The Americans dream of rocket ships, fireworks, freedom, and hallelujah while they sleep on through the alarm, the house afire. It's true that the newcomers to Washington, D.C. are different than ever before, but after all is said and done, they are Americans. The construction is underway for the wall around the Washington, D.C. Beltway to drain the swamp with an impressive culvert to crash and burn into the scandal. And now, the Americans. We rejoin our reality show already in progress. We see SpongeBob, Dr. Strange Pants, the new Secretary of Intelligence Secrets in prison camps, already working on his cabin assignments for the summer camp guards or counselors, or, inmates, campers. Are you ready for the summer? And in the parallelogram office, we find President Cosmo Nutt at his big desk, working hard on his big, clean, yellow legal pad, drawing pictures of dollar signs, boobs, and tanks. And as we move closer toward the big event, in the Patsy's Barracks, located off the Rose Garden, we find Rusty Krakemeyer from Hickory, Indiana, on the roof, getting ready to test his Phantom Menace costume and cape. The director of the big event, Cecil B. de Propaganda, has just arrived at the helicopter pad on the lawn to meet with Cosmo Nutt and SpongeBob Dr. Strangepants to discuss the big event. Cecil B. has under his arm the 8x10 glossy photos and the 3-ring binder and video telling all about the big event and the big plan. We also find the new guardian taking up residence in his new office at the White House basement next to the boiler room, dressed in his work clothes, tan pants, tan shirt, tan cap, name tag Ralph, like an actor playing a janitor in a sitcom in the 1960s. His office door says Maintenance of Public Lies. He takes the back elevator, the kitchen trolley, up to the parallelogram office, walks in door number 3 as the child left behind sits under the desk. Her doll is off to one side, writing something on a yellow legal pad. The guardian steps up to the desk to talk to President Cosmo Nutt. The child left behind can see the dust on the black shoes of the guardian. She writes a note. "So," says Cosmo Nutt, "what do you got?" The guardian hands over a manila envelope. "We need to maintain these public lies." Cosmo Nutt opened the folder and drew out the papers. He read the stamps on each of the documents. "Yes," said Cosmo Nutt, of course, and how do we do that? What if we just told the truth? Wouldn't it be simpler?" asks Nutt. "Everything would fall apart," says the guardian. "Nobody would pay their taxes. Nobody would go to work if they knew what's written in those documents." "I see," said President Cosmo Nutt. "Well, please sit down and let's talk about each of these one by one in detail. I need to know just what's going on." "Yes, of course, sir," says the guardian. As the child left behind, sitting under the desk with her big yellow legal pad and lots of sharpened number 2 pencils, smiles wide and prepares to write. Stay tuned next week for probably yet another episode of The Americans, when we'll find John Kennedy Jr., John, dressed as the letter Q on Sesame Street, with Big Bird and Snuffleupagus reading aloud the letters delivered to the Bush family, the Bidens, and the Clintons during the funeral for George H.W. Bush.
Moonrock Books. We're a group of scholars, experts, and authors who feel the world really needs saving. and that resisting the American Empire is the right thing to do. People are starved for truth. They are given lies. They subsist on lies, but it's not really living. People are not watching TV news. They're ceasing to read newspapers, too, because they know by now they will not find it there. The biggest battle being fought anywhere is with information. If the people can receive the truth, they will do the right thing. We are publishing the truth about Sandy Hook, about the Boston bombing, about the moon landings, about the Holocaust, and much, much more. The truth. It falls upon us to fight the empire and save the world. Join us, Moonrock Books.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and Earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Do you or someone you know suffer from poor circulation, shortness of breath, or chest pains? Are you looking for a more natural solution to help overcome these problems? People tell us that after just a few months taking Extendivite, their doctors have noticed unexplainable improvements in their overall health. For more information, visit heartdrop.com or call 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
And tell them Nighthawk sent you, because if you call this number and tell them Nighthawk sent you, you'll get $5 off your first order at extendivite.com. Thank you.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Now, it's time for My Big Fat American Book with your host, Charlie Rose. As we zoom in on our host at his big round table, sitting all alone in the studio before tonight's guest arrives, we're able to look over his shoulder as he writes notes on Bilderberg Group stationery for tonight's show. What is Charlie Rose writing? Let's have a look, shall we? Boston Strong is Bullshit The U.S. has lost its way. It should have been evident with LBJ, then Nixon, and we should have really realized it was Ford, but really all we wanted to do was live our lives and have fun and happy children. So, well, there was Reagan and Clinton and Carter and Bush and another Bush and now Obama. It's almost so obvious now we can't really ignore it, but we will ignore it as long as we possibly can. We will ignore it. What we really need is a manifesto or a great novel that will once and for all show us what we already know, what we knew in our hearts in 1963 and every year and day since then. Yep, it's about all the lies, and it would probably be about money, too, because that's always in there. Torture, Waco, Oklahoma City, and 9/11, and Sandy Hook, Tucson, Aurora, and Boston, and there'd be a lot more names of cities in there. Memphis, and the Ambassador Hotel Pantry, and Dallas, and see? You already know what I'm talking about. I just have to say the town. And there should be this essay or this novel that's not too long or maybe really long, like a Russian novel. When we read it, we'd all say, oh, yeah, that's just how it is. And then Obama would be in jail and Bush would be in jail and Clinton would be in jail and Trump as well. And there'd be a big hearing in Washington. It would mean something. It would be on TV every afternoon. And at the end of it, all these men and women, oh yeah, Condoleezza too, would be shown being taken to prison, just ducking their heads into the back seat of a police car by an overhead special copter cam. And then they would bring in all the high school history books and start going through them and start putting in the right stuff. They put big teacher red pen marks for all the made up shit like the moon and the Pearl Harbor attack and WMD and anthrax on the Gulf of Tonkin and Wellstone's plane crash, and put in the real stuff, the stuff they had in these other books, in these big old cardboard boxes that they were never going to show us. Like the old photos in Grandma's closet, with her and Grandpa drinking beer and smoking cigarettes sitting on top of the old Model A. And the late night comedians would talk about real stuff, like the crap that used to be in the high school history books. And about how they used to talk about how one truck bomb did that to the Murrah building. And they used to say that jet fuel took down those big NYC buildings. And how we used to say a whole airplane disappeared into that little hole in the Pentagon, in that little hole in the ground in Pennsylvania. They'd say jokes about that stuff just as easily as Bob Hope used to talk about golf and airplane food, and we all thought it was the funniest crap ever. They would start talking about a whole bunch of stuff after that big meeting, things they never talked about before, because once you get talking, other things come to mind, like the minimum wage, the climate, the environment, doctor bills, things to help people live better. Then some people would say, hey, you know what else we could do? They'd go fix up the old school in the middle of town, put in new sidewalks in the neighborhood around that old school. They'd start tearing down the county jail and the prison in town, brick by brick. And then all because of this one novel that said things everybody already knew, a bunch of people would walk to the CIA building and the FBI building and the Homeland Security building, and they would walk right in because they paid for this crap piece of crap building anyway. Then they would walk over to the fence with the razor wire and they would cut it down, and they would help the people through, and they would put up this homemade sign, maybe with cardboard and crayons, and tack it up on a stick or a branch or a shovel, and it would say America on it. That's what might all happen. As soon as the person is born, he'll write this manifesto, a clear, concise, inexpensive novel that will tell us all the things we already know. And all we have to do now is wait. Oh, hello. I'm Charlie Rose. This is my big, fat American book. Tonight's guest is the author of the Walmart, Target, and Barnes & Noble big sellers, 50 Shades of Vampire Blood, The Six Sexy Superheroes Who Saved Sacramento, as well as Biggest Kitchen, Bigger Hamburger, and Brighter Bathroom. We'll be right back after a word from the good folks at Soapy Suds Detergent. We hope you'll join us. It's really soapy. and really sudsy. I'm Charlie Rose.
Our next guest to the show is Richard Flamer. Richard Flamer was with us for quite a long time as a regular guest, and he's been off for a few months. And we're going to hear from Richard Flamer at the Catholic Worker in Chiapas, Mexico, right about now.
This wasn't the worst trek, but surely among the bottom 10 of my experiences. I flew to the U.S. in September, ostensibly for some medical treatment. I managed to spend a couple of days in Mexico City before heading on to Des Moines. The days spent in the city were taken up with a visit to the U.S. Embassy to find out how to get a permanent residency for my wife, Araceli, which incidentally, they gave me an appointment for 7 o'clock in the morning, and I got there and didn't actually get in to see the person I needed to see until 1 o'clock in the afternoon. The second day was a visit to several museums, most particularly to see some of the famous murals in San Ildefonso, especially those of Diego Rivera. I finally got to Des Moines around 10 p.m. with no one awaiting me. Apparently, people forgot I was coming. I finally got a hold of Gil, who happened to be camping quite a ways away. He got in touch with Frank Cordero, who arrived a couple of hours later. The following day, I went to the VA hospital for a thorough checkup, only to discover my former doctor had retired, so I got to meet my nurse practitioner. She was certainly nice enough and able, but I had to explain the complication of living in Mexico, hence not able to get meds with any frequency. I made the appointment with the ophthalmologist to take care of my cataracts. Also made the appointment for the urologist whom I had seen previously. Ophthalmologist and urologist, both great doctors, but as usual, complications arose. Specifically, the first eye was difficult since the anesthetic drops did not work, so it was painful. With the urologist, I ended up having to get my urethra expanded for the camera to check my prostate. Both painful experiences. While I waited to heal, there was not much I could do around the Catholic Worker house where I was staying. Couldn't read nor work. 4 weeks of light duty, collecting woodworking tools, going to services at the Des Moines Intentional Ecumenical Community, and visiting with old friends. I have to say I'm not much one for relaxing. I got an old Chevy S10 pickup donated by Lyle Ball and his wife Trudy, a retired Methodist minister whom I've known for years. Trouble was, I had arranged for a large number of tools to be donated, so I ended up trading the pickup for a one-ton cargo van for my friend Charlie. I ended up working on the van in the snow, changing brake lines, cleaning the interior, and getting some tires. With the van in Omaha and the pickup in Des Moines, I was back and forth a number of times, continuing with visits to the VA. Had the other eye operated on, but a general anesthetic and injection into my optic nerve really scared me. Yet the anesthesiologist was superb with no problems. I have to say that my experiences with the VA hospital in Des Moines have been superb. Just wonderful people. Couldn't ask for anything better. I headed over to see Emily and David at the newish Catholic Worker in Iowa City, where I stayed for a couple of days, meeting folks and getting to know the community where my wife will be staying when she goes to the States in April for her application as a permanent resident. I was thrilled for the chance for a talk with some of the supporters in Iowa City, and I raised some money to pay for part of the trip back. Emily Sinwell has not only been active with the Catholic Worker, but has spent some time in Chiapas as well. She's a great lady. She managed to get some flannel sheets and a heavy-duty stroller for a child with cerebral palsy who's one of our neighbors. A young couple from the Des Moines Worker decided to accompany me back to Chiapas. Lena and Jacob came with me after I'd been to my last doctor's visit. We headed to Brownsville, Texas, stopping to sleep in the van for one night then arriving in San Antonio to visit my friend Jim Groff and his wife Patty. Jim had also been collecting tools, so we spent the night, had a good meal, slept a bit, and headed to Brownsville. Brownsville's a town I don't much like. I don't like any frontier towns. We ended up spending 3 days in the town. The problem was a particular official who would not allow us to enter with a panel van. That is, he called it a commercial vehicle. The first day we returned and tried to figure out options. The second day we spent looking at used vehicles on various car lots. I found a good vehicle, 3/4 ton, which had no windows but was a normal sort of van. Just to be sure, we took a couple of photos and checked on the other side of the border, but found out it was considered a commercial van as well. By the third day, we ended up buying a van from a local man, which had windows and seats. Before leaving Brownsville, I bought some used tires. We took out the seats, transferred the tools, and sold the one-ton van, headed back across the border. This time with luck, but I ended up having to spend 8,000 pesos, or about $450, in import taxes for the tools. With the van in Jacob's name, got insurance and paid the bond to bring the van into the country. The truck was okay until we had our first flat tire. The spare, which was on the rear tailgate, looked to be in fine condition, so we changed it, only to find out further along the route that it had sat too long and blew apart on the final leg of our journey. We bought another used tire and finally made it to San Cristobal after another day on the road because of an 8-hour traffic blockade on the final leg. In San Cristobal, I put the van into a shop with my local mechanic who fixed the power steering hose, changed the plugs and plug wires, and bought a new tire. Jacob and Rena played tourists, and I got back to work on the farm. The tools had been unloaded, so I sorted through them all and sectioned off some that were going to East Altepec for a new carpentry shop in the earthquake zone of last year. The earthquake had last year damaged over 700 of the 1,200 houses in the hometown of Arisoy's parents. There was only one other carpentry shop there at the time, and it has since gone back to work, but there's only two guys working in it. It's a very small shop. They're the only ones making doors and windows. Jacob and Rena drove the van back where it was purchased by Jessica Resnicek, who promptly put the money she had raised in my bank account. The trip was a success in that I got the tools necessary for a new wood shop down here. Jessica got her van. Jacob and Rena got to adventure in Mexico. Joel, son of Josie, got out of his mother's house with a new stroller. He'd grown enough so that he was too heavy for his mother to carry him for long distances. The child with cerebral palsy was delighted, along with his mother. I'm not sure I want to return to the U.S. This last trip was not only fraught with the usual difficulties of bureaucracy at borders, dealing with local motor vehicle officials, etc. It was hard for me to understand the turmoil in both political and social mores of the American society. I had occasion, through the good offices of Roger Ralph, to speak a bit about the tragedy of the caravans coming through Mexico, though I prefer to call them an exodus. The interview that Roger conducted can be seen on YouTube and speaks to some of the reasons for the exodus. I'm not sure I want to face the pessimism, the fear-mongering, the egocentricity, the ethnocentricity of the American public. All I can do is try to follow the way of the prophets and look into the little things of trying to follow what is in Matthew and the Sermon on the Mount. Specifically, I ended up coming back to a Mexico that was much changed for me, including the new president, López Obrador. And he's a populist. And he's done some interesting things. The first thing he did when he got into office was to say that no public official will make more than the president of the country. And he set his own salary at a very low price, actually. And that, of course, raised all kinds of issues, especially amongst the Supreme Court, where some of the officials were making as much as $50,000 a month. Well, the president's only making about $8,000 a month. So they, but that's, there's, that's brought up a constitutional issue, but at the same time, the, in a measure to halt the austerity or to continue with the austerity program of Lopez Obrador, the new president, the Supreme Court voluntarily cut their salaries by 25% last week. There's been a huge problem over the last 15 years with the robbery of gasoline from ducts, gas pipelines that go through the western part of Mexico. And so this week, Lopez Obrador shut down all the pipelines with a government-run gasoline company called Pemex and introduced the gasoline via tankers, both with tractor trailers and with trains. And they shut down the pipelines until they can be repaired, checked, and with military standing by to guard the refineries. So there's been gas shortages in the western part of the states, but by and large, they're short-term shortages just over distribution. But in it, the reason for the shutdown of the pipelines was a $6 billion loss last year of gasoline from robbery from those pipelines, mostly conducted by the cartels. But the president himself is, I think he's doing a magnificent job, and he's a very humble kind of guy. He holds his press conferences at 6 a.m. on the steps of his house, and he refused to go to the big presidential palace, and in fact turned it into a public museum. So he and his wife live in a middle-class house in Mexico City, and that's where he holds his press conferences every day. He's also cut out the entire presidential guard, which was some 400 soldiers with special duties to guard the president. And he just disbanded it as three military people who are his bodyguards, but he doesn't like to use them. And he drives the little Toyota, and he sold the three presidential limousines, and the presidential jet is up for sale now. So in some ways, he's done a great job. I think he's making mistakes along the way, but they're minor. And in the Senate and the House, the equivalent of the Senate and the House, he has a majority, so he's been able to introduce a lot of new legislation, which will be coming up soon. So I'm pretty confident, and it's so different from the hostile atmosphere up in the States. And is when the caravans first started coming up through Mexico, Lopez Obrador, the first thing he said was, no, we should welcome them. They're a treasure. And we're not about to give up our soul just because other people need help. And that's such a far cry from the fear-mongering and what goes on along the border now, the so-called crisis, which, I don't know, just seems stupid to me. I mean, if you've ever known any of these migrants, most of the ones that I know are just superb people. They're just fleeing because of the violence and the distortion of their lives. Usually, if you go back far enough, you can see it's pretty much all caused by the U.S. The death squads in Guatemala and the horrible economy and the coup d'etat that took place in Honduras. it's all part of that same ugly mess. But here on the farm, life is good. I keep making furniture, and there doesn't seem to be any, I mean, there seems to be a need for it all the time with my neighbors and friends. And working with the poor over in Guatemala. In fact, that's where I'm heading tomorrow morning, leaving for Huehuetenango to raise the money for two more scholarships for young ladies to go to the equivalent of a high school out of Yolanda Hosh, where I've been working. So I'm pretty happy, actually, especially happy that I'm back here. And I really don't know that I'm going to go to the States anymore unless it's because I have to. But my life here's really so much better.
Well, Richard, I'm so glad that you are happy. And let me tell you, I am very happy that you're back on our show. Well, we have missed you. And just hearing the story of this trip, you know, reminded me again how well you string things together and give us a word picture. I almost felt like I was riding along with you. So it was just really great.
Good for you. Good. I'm glad. And I'm actually glad to be back. A lot of the pressure is off from it with that stuff I had done, the medical stuff. And,
yeah.
And I'm feeling good. And so now I'm back to my old self here and glad to be back on the show.
Well, thanks. And thanks for that great description. And hey, we will look forward to seeing you again next month.
Okay. Thanks so much, Chuck.
Thank you, Richard. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So glad to have Richard Blamer back on our show. We really missed him. And we're certainly glad that he's taking care of the health issues. And if I had that life that he has down there, I probably wouldn't want to come back to the U.S. either. Of course, it's a hard life, but it's a good one. If I could save time in a bottle, the first thing that I'd like to do is to save every day till eternity passes away, just to spend them with you. If I could make days last forever, if words could make wishes come true, I'd save every day like a treasure, and then again I would spend them with you. But there never seems to be enough time to do the things you want to do once you find them. I've looked around enough to know that you're the one I want to go through time with. If I had a box just for wishes and dreams that had never come true, the box would be empty except for the memories of how they were answered by you. But there never seems to be enough time to do the things you want to do once you find them. I've looked around enough to know that you're the one I want to go through time with.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Ohio Exopolitics will be on from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A. Mark Steyer will have guests on that will discuss many important topics, including the state of the world today. However, much of the show will be dedicated to the writings of Edward Albert Meyer. Let me read a short passage from one of his writings. Love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. All of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. Please join Mark on Ohio Exopolitics from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A.
Do you or someone you know suffer from poor circulation, shortness of breath, or chest pains? Are you looking for a more natural solution to help overcome these problems? People tell us that after just a few months taking Extendivite, their doctors have noticed unexplainable improvements in their overall health. For more information, visit heartdrop.com or call 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
And tell them Nighthawk sent you, because if you call this number and tell them Nighthawk sent you, you'll get $5 off your first order at extendivite.com. Thank you.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the show is Jim Fetzer. Jim Fetzer is a retired philosophy professor. He's a reporter, a radio show host. He is on the cusp of many leading edge reports on his many radio shows. One of them is The Real Deal. And now we're going to hear from Jim Fetzer in Madison, Wisconsin.
Great to be with you guys again. On 27 November 2018, the Minneapolis law firm Mess, Bescher & Spence Limited filed a suit against me on behalf of its client, plaintiff Leonard Posner, for defamation, and I was properly served on 29 November 2018. Under Wisconsin law, a defendant has 45 days to submit a response, which would make it imperative that I reply by 11 January 2019, tomorrow, with either an answer or a motion to dismiss. I filed an answer rather than a motion to dismiss early on 4 January 2019 because I do not want the case to be dismissed. I want to have a formal legal resolution. The complaint is narrowly drawn to focus on assertions I have made, no doubt hundreds of times, that the death certificate that Leonard Posner gave to Kelly Watt is a fabrication, where the complaint cites two instances in which I made that assertion, one from Chapter 11 of the book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, second edition, 2016, which I edited, and one from How We Know Sandy Hook Was a FEMA Drill, Nobody Died for an Anti-Gun Agenda, 5 August 2018, published as a contribution to Sandy Hook Truth, Memoranda for the President, 2018, edited by Robert David Steele, which you can download for free from his site. The complaint, paraphrasing for simplicity, alleges that those assertions are false because the death certificate is not a fabrication or forgery or fake, all words I have used to describe it, and does not differ, quote, in any material respect, end quote, from the death certificate certified by the state of Connecticut. It further alleges that my assertions were made in reckless disregard of the facts and intended to harm plaintiff's reputation and subject plaintiff to public contempt, disgrace, ridicule, or attack. By my answer, I categorically reject and deny each and every one of these allegations. The specifics of my response are detailed in my answer below, which is available as a public document from the Dane County Courthouse, Madison, Wisconsin. While I do believe the plaintiff, Leonard Posner, is in fact deserving of public contempt, disgrace, ridicule, and attack, my efforts have been directed solely at determining the truth about Sandy Hook in collaboration with other students of the case, independent of their consequences for affected parties. As the saying goes, let the chips fall where they may. Moreover, since the plaintiff has been actively involved in the effort to suppress research that would expose the truth about Sandy Hook, he has thereby made himself a public figure. Condensed into a nutshell, the arguments of the parties to this dispute adopt the following stances or positions. Plaintiff, since the death certificate that Leonard Posner gave to Kelly Watt does not differ in any material respect from the death certificate certified by the state of Connecticut, it must be authentic and therefore cannot be a fake, a forgery, or a fabrication, as the defendant claims, and as a consequence, he has defamed the plaintiff. Defendant, since the death certificate that Leonard Posner gave to Kelly Watt has been shown to be a fake, a forgery, or a fabrication, as the defendant claims, if the death certificate certified by the state of Connecticut does not differ in any material respect, the state of Connecticut has certified a fabrication, which qualifies as a crime. Moreover, as my answer explains, these documents are not the same in every material respect, where the official copy has a file number, where the copy given to Kelly Watt lacks, and has a state seal, which the copy given to Kelly Watt also lacks. There are other differences that may be expected to emerge at trial, but over and beyond the direct proof that the copy given to Kelly Watt is a fabrication, there is an amount of indirect proof that the copy given to Kelly Watt and the state certified copy cannot possibly be authentic because nobody died at Sandy Hook. If nobody died at Sandy Hook, then any death certificate for victims of the purported shooting must be fabrications. This is not rocket science. Moreover, research conducted since the publication of Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, second edition 2016, has confirmed the conjecture initially advanced by Kelly Watt that the party called NP for Noah Posner in the complaint is a fiction made up out of photographs of one Michael Vabner, said to be the older stepbrother of Noah, but one and the same person shown in many photographs published by the plaintiff himself. My legal response to the lawsuit, of course, is presented in my answer rather than in these informal remarks, which are intended to provide a summary overview of the lawsuit and why it matters. For anyone who wants to have an introduction to the evidence that establishes, beyond a reasonable doubt, that Sandy Hook was a two-day FEMA exercise involving children presented as mass murder to promote gun control as an element of the political agenda of Barack Obama, Joe Biden, Eric Holder, and other government officials at the time, check out this video. Sandy Hook update, Tracy loses, Wolfgang wins, the deep state strikes back, Jim Fetzer, PhD, at BitChute. No doubt many readers may be baffled that someone who is being sued would discuss the case so openly. This is contrary to ordinary experience. But this is not an ordinary case. As I have extensively documented, the mainstream media has been conducting an exercise in disinformation to keep the truth about Sandy Hook from the public. As an illustration, read, fake news and false flag lawsuit. AP reporter caught falsifying story, 9 December 2018, available here on my blog at jamesfetzer.org. The ongoing series of staged attacks to manipulate public opinion must end. This is where I am taking my stand. Everyone within the sound of my voice can find my blog, the Sandy Hook Posner v. Fetzer lawsuit for dummies, on jamesfetzer.org. I will read some of the elements of my response that pertain to this case. In particular, the claims of the plaintiff regarding this ostensible death certificate of NP mentioned in paragraph 3 thereof were public argumentation, which establishes the plaintiff as a public figure. The copy of the death certificate circulated by the plaintiff, the same mentioned in the last two lines of paragraph 3 thereof, is materially different from the death certificate said to be prepared by the state of Connecticut, among other things, in that the copy circulated by the plaintiff has no file number, no state seal, is different in color and texture, and includes text that was plainly enough photoshopped. The said features of the circulated copy substantiate the conclusion of the defendant Fetzer that the purported death certificate of NP is inauthentic and false. As reported on page 182-183 in the publication mentioned in the last two lines of paragraph 3 thereof, the type is clearly smaller in box 3 than in the rest of the page. Moreover, a capital A in box 12, box 22, and box 33 has a small flag in the pinnacle, yet the capital A in box 12, box 22, box 26, box 39, and box 46 does not have a small flag in the pinnacle, which indicates fabrication and fakery. Again, as reported on pages 182-183 in the publication mentioned in the last few lines of paragraph 3 thereof, the spacing between N and O in box 1 and box 7 are clearly different, which indicates fabrication and fakery. Again, as reported on pages 182-183 in the publication mentioned in the last two lines of paragraph 3 therein, the N in box 1 and the N in box 26 are clearly not the same, which indicates fabrication and fakery. Again, as reported on pages 182-183 in the publication mentioned in the last two lines of paragraph 3 thereof, the spacing between S and A in box 1 is clearly not the same as the spacing between S and A in box 11, which indicates fabrication and fakery. again, as reported on pages 182, 183 in the publication mentioned in the last two lines of paragraph 3 thereof, the printing of the name Posner in box 1 is clearly different from the name Posner in box 20, which indicates fabrication and fakery. Because of the variation in spacing and fonts in the copy of the death certificate circulated by the plaintiff and the copy said to be certified by the state of Connecticut, here and above described in paragraph 8 through 13 thereon, if the latter is the same as the former, as insisted by the plaintiff, the latter is most likely inauthentic and is a fake, prepared as such by the state of Connecticut, as the defendant Fetzer believes. Mark my words, this is a case I am going to see through to the end. And I invite you all to follow up the Sandy Hook Posner versus lawsuit for dummies. Go to my blog, jamesfetzer.org, and check it out. Mike and Chuck, always a pleasure.
Thank you, Jim Fetzer. Coming soon to your county fair, the traveling display, the United States of America Hall of Shame. Do you hear your lone nuts? The wackos, the criminals, the terrorists, the long-haired weirdos, and the greasy raincoats in the subway at midnight. America, where we produce monsters who appear as anyone, and yet through their actions and inactions kill the prophets, keep the poor in the gutter, and still continue to live out their lives in peace in America, and long later die on television with full honors, and still we say nothing about their crimes, but go home after the parade, shaking our heads, at least, finally, rid of them. Come out to your local county fair to see the traveling display, photos, memorabilia of the Bush administration, Ronald Reagan, the Warren Commission, the 9/11 Commission, Paul Tibbetts, Harry Truman, George Bush Sr., Bill Clinton, Janet Reno, Lon Horiuchi, the FBI sniper who shot and killed Vicki Weaver while she was holding her 10-month-old child behind the door of the family home at Ruby Ridge. You can also see historical Hall of Shame displays of the medical examiner at Sandy Hook and every editor of every major newspaper in the United States that has told the annual lie about the JFK murder for over 50 years. Come on out to your county fair. It's pretty much all there. Step right up, throw a tomato, hit Clinton in the nose, win a stuffed animal for your sweetie pie. Fulfill that recurring dream you have of punching George W. Bush smack in the face. These are your lone nuts, the wackos, the criminals, the terrorists, the long-haired weirdos, and the greasy raincoats in the subway at midnight. America, where we produce monsters who appear as anyone, and yet, through their actions and inactions, kill the prophets, keep the poor in the gutter, and still continue to live out their lives in peace in America, and long later die on television with full honors, and still we say nothing about their crimes, but go home after the parade, shaking our heads. At least, finally, rid of them.
Our next guest for the show is Thomas Wertman. Thomas Wertman is the director of the Ohio MUFON Mutual UFO Network. He joins us each month from Cleveland. And now we're going to attempt to contact Thomas Wertman of MUFON in Cleveland, Ohio.
Hello?
Well, hello, Thomas. It's Chuck and Mike, the New American Dream Radio Show. And you're on the air.
Great. What I want to talk about tonight is every time these new UFO shows come out, sometimes I get really apprehensive on how good they're going to be or potentially how bad they're going to be. So back in November, I was contacted by a group promoting this new show called Project Blue Book. And they said, how would you like to come out to see the show, a premiere of it? On an evening, we'll give you some popcorn, give some sodas out there. Now, don't think I just like to go out and get free tickets and sodas, but it's a show that I thought, well, I got to see this thing. Why? Back as a kid, I used to read every UFO book I could get back in the 1960s. And a lot of the books I had featured Project Blue Book. Now, it had a connection back to where I live at from Ohio because it's down in Dayton. It also had the UFOs, and some of the events were from my own state on there, besides some other ones that really took my interest. And I read everything I could about that program. And I visualized this mammoth program with a lot of people working there investigating UFOs. Well, the reality is actually much different than that once I found out. And even at one point, I mean, tell you how much no life I had back as a kid. I used to think, wow, what would it be like being a UFO investigator? Going around like Heineken doing these investigations on there. Well, here it is now 50 years later, and I'm doing UFO investigations. I've also had contact with people who knew Heineck, contact with people from his old organization. It's given me also inside information how things really went. In reality, there was no mammoth project with a lot of people working down there. There's actually a handful of people doing the investigations. And when I watched a show, along with a number of my friends, one of the things they did is they kind of like looked at it and started going at it with like a knife and cutting everything down they potentially found fault with. I'm like, let's look back and look at this show analytically wise and see what they're doing with it. Number one, what it is, it was called a dramatization. That means they're going to take Hollywood's artistic liberties. They're going to take and potentially condense storylines down because, I mean, you've only got an hour to tell this whole mammoth story. The one story they told on that night that we're there is about a UFO dogfight involving a former World War II fighter pilot. And this was an event supposedly occurred right around 1948, but was based on an actual event called the Gorman of UFO interception. Basically, it goes back to a gentleman by the name of Gorman was flying a fighter plane along with two compatriots. And they broke off to go back home, and he went to do some night flying, where he encountered a UFO. Well, I wanted to see how these stories contrast to each other, and not just the storyline, but the intent behind what happened on there. When I started watching this, I found faults immediately on there, the wrong types of planes. They also took a little liberties in how they were moving and flying around, but the basic content was still there. The gentleman did have an interception with an object. He observed a bright light off in the distance. He went to try to intercept it, and he said the object was actually going much faster than what he could. He couldn't keep up with it. He even put his plane into a climb. And when he put his plane into a climb, he said the thing appeared to be turning and had much more maneuverability than he did. And at one point, he even felt he blacked out trying to duplicate the turns that this object did. It did not collide, kind of like they portrayed in the TV show, but that's a whole nother story. And then he eventually goes back to his base. Well, Heineck got involved. Well, Heineck, I don't believe, was actually involved in this case, but the intent behind the investigation, the investigators came in there, they found residual radiation on his plane, they compared it back to other aircraft that were not in that flight, and they found a higher content of radiation. And what the show, to kind of sum it up, they basically started portraying the storyline as trying to debunk everything that the pilot said, the Air Force is the one debunking, and it portrayed Heineck as being somebody who is much more skeptical, saying, wait a minute, yes, you showed me this, and you showed me this, but these things are not adding up. Well, he didn't take that skeptical type of view at first. He was actually, in this case, he was a professor of astronomy, and he came in and thought most people initially had misidentified things. They weren't reliable witnesses. And he saw really the whole thing as being basically like misidentification. Well, as things went on, he started reading more and more reports because he was involved not only in a Project Sign, an earlier project, but in Project Blue Book as it went on, he started seeing some of the explanations coming in. But then he really started examining the evidence. And when he looked at the evidence at times did not match what the reports were coming out and saying. For example, here you may have radar evidence, but it would explain it in a way, a certain way that he did not believe was correct. So he started changing from being a skeptic to actually somebody who was much more on board with this whole subject of UFOs. And he even started coming out and believing in this case that they weren't necessarily extraterrestrial. They may have been interdimensional, because he pointed out that if you have some objects being picked up on radar, that may be an extraterrestrial craft. But he also had individuals saying that they saw something that appeared or rapidly disappeared in an instant. And he started thinking, hey, maybe this is going back to interdimensional type objects on here. So, I mean, it was very, very fascinating from that sense, his points of view. And as he went on, he started doing much deeper investigations on his own. He started actually, he was very quiet about it openly, but he started actually vocalizing, in this case, a lot of his points of view out there. And he was kind of considered, in this case, the father of ufology out there with his research. Now, when I saw the show, yes, I saw faults in it, but one thing I saw was, in this case, the sense behind what he was doing. Number one, he was doing his research. He was looking at the data. He was analyzing the data. He was very open-minded about what was going on. And he wasn't just producing a outcome later on just to give it a tag and move on to the next case. He was actually doing serious research on it. And if you look at their channel, what they've done is, history has done something that's very, very unique. They put out not only the dramatization, but they also put a report on what really happened, the actual event that these stories are based on. So you can actually see two sides. One, this is the actual case. This is a dramatization. They go back and say, okay, here is Hynek. This is who Hynek was. This is what he really did. This is the dramatization showing Hynek. And I think they're really staying true to his persona on there, even though they're taking some little liberties in some other areas. But that's just part of the series. And as this series goes on, they're going to be actually dealing with a number of the older cases, but they're going to be bringing to light for several reasons. One, it's historical in this case. And a lot of people may not be looking at the historical side of things on here. I've run into people who don't know certain events that have happened in my area locally on there that go back a number of years ago, because they look at things more here and now. The advantage about some of these older cases is the data may have been more pure because it may not be tainted by outside sources on here. In this case, the investigators were getting it back then directly from the people. So I'm just curious to see how this whole thing keeps on going out. And one of the cases locally that I'm hoping they're going to do later on was one involving Portage County that Hynek himself was actually involved with discussing with the individuals. If you ever saw the movie Close Encounters, in the movie Close Encounters, Hynek actually made a small appearance in there at the end of the movie. But the car chase scene Close Encounters is actually where a UFO chase is being chased by a police cruiser. That was actually based on Portage County from 1966, Portage County, Ohio, where two deputies chased an unidentified flying object all the way from Ohio into Pennsylvania, a total of 86 miles. And
we're going to have to stop. Okay. Maybe you can tell us the rest about that chase and the case.
I can do that,
but we actually went a little overtime. So,
okay,
thank you very much. Happy New Year, and okay. Talk to you in February.
Okay, same to you, Chuck. Happy New Year. Okay, bye.
Listen to Revolution.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Decentralization and bank annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, MyCoin, YourCoin, blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern, Studio A.
Do you or someone you know suffer from poor circulation, shortness of breath, or chest pains? Are you looking for a more natural solution to help overcome these problems? People tell us that after just a few months taking Extendivite, their doctors have noticed unexplainable improvements in their overall health. For more information, visit heartdrop.com or call 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
And tell them Nighthawk sent you, because if you call this number and tell them Nighthawk sent you, you'll get $5 off your first order at extendivite.com. Thank you.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the show is Frank Cordell. Frank Cordell joins us each week from Des Moines, Iowa, the Des Moines Catholic Worker. Frank's a former Catholic priest, a former federal prisoner, federal county jail prisoner for peace. And now we're going to hear the conversation between Frank Cordell and Chuck Gregory.
Hello, Chuck.
Well, hello, Frank. What's going on in Des Moines?
Well, Des Moines is finally getting some temperatures that reflect the January that we're living. However, the last a week or so, we've just been having delightful weather, livable weather, you know, and gets up to the 40s. That's really nice for Iowa in January. Wow. But it's getting cold again. So, you know, what's going to happen to the planet is going to happen to us all. And we all ought to do what we can to stop it. And in the meantime, sometimes it works in your favor. Personally, on the place you are on the planet, if your day is warmer than it normally is in the winter here, most old folks like myself think it's a good thing. So just for creaturely comforts, it's a blessing sometimes with the climate change in Iowa, because the winters aren't so bad. I know that's probably a selfish thing to say, but selfishness is what we're all about in this country, and being distant and away and unattached to things that we are in direct relationship to. So, which is a good segue for me to bring you all up to our efforts at the Drone Command Center here in December 28th. Last, we had our second witness there.
So again, December 28th is a one of those Christmas weekdays, and in the Catholic Church, it's the Feast of the Holy Innocents. It's when the church remembers in the Matthew story of Jesus's birth, how Herod killed the infant children in Bethlehem based on information he got from astrologers who read stars that led to Jesus and revealed the Magi and revealed the Messiah. Gifts were given, and yet soon after that very night, they had to take off to Egypt, the Holy Family, to avoid the ill intent of the local politician, Herod, and death squads. This is an old story. It's also contemporary because it repeats itself all the time in known history when innocent people and children especially die because of political expediency, issues of politics. And in this case, it was divine succession. Who's the king? Who rules? Others die when that is asked. This is the story of Jesus, his birth and his life. The connection for us, of course, is we do this annual thing at our Drone Command Center. You know, it's just so hard for me to just sit here and talk about this in a normal way. Like, the new normal is Donald Trump is president of the United States, and the new normal is computer geek National Guard warriors are doing 8-hour shifts in Des Moines at their computer command center, and they're killing people in the Middle East from the skies. It's just the new normal. We had a great little retreat with West Howard Brook, who gave us really two really good solid sessions of Bible study. We gathered very humbly. We broke the double digits. I think we had 13 people out there. It was cold, very cold and windy. And it was a very quick thing. We got out there with our banners, Herod, and with the banner that would say, Herod killed the infants. The Iowa Drone Command Center kills them too. Celebrate Christmas. Shut the Drone Command. And we had great graphics with these banners. We just had a few people speak, and not very long. My little thing, I brought out bells as a clanging to bring people's attention, wake people up, draw the ears and eyes and focus to what's going on here, criminal activity. But all of us spoke very quickly because it was cold, and went on down to the site. Great photo we got. Guy came out with one of these automatic rifles to stop me, which was no big deal. And then an officer came and patted me down, took me into custody behind the gate in their little guardhouse until the Des Moines police came. And they came and they took me off site and decided just to write me a citation. And then they took me home. Nice guys. We discussed, interesting enough, we discussed the issues about my neighborhood. Our corner is a well-known place where the police come a lot. Just another day as a Catholic worker. And we're going to go back. I mean, you just keep doing these things, even if they don't pay attention, even if they don't care. And we're going to go back in March. We're going to be hosting the Midwest Worker Resistance Retreat, and it's going to be the weekend of St. Patrick's Day. So it'll be March 15th, 16th, and 17th. And we did this four years ago. 5 years ago, 2014. And it was in anticipation of the drone command being centered in Des Moines because it hadn't been fully, you know, up and going. It was in development by then. So we're going to do this repeat thing, which marks about how long we've been working on this, 5 years. And we just really haven't got much of a mojo local. People just don't want to deal with this. It's just amazing. I'm at a loss. But we'll keep doing our pathetic little dance and effort to draw attention. I just don't know why people don't understand that. Do we get the right to send death to people's neighborhoods based on what? We do, even if we only kill the bad guys, we're assassinating people with no due process. Doesn't anybody understand that that's outrageous?
Exactly.
That creates hate. That would make people who have nothing, who live in a hut, do anything they can do for the rest of their lives to kill Americans? Why not? If they did that to my family, wouldn't that be what we would kind of blood thing? I don't get it.
Yeah.
And then we kill and we have no, it's completely detached. We're away from it. It's being done in our name and nobody seems to care. Well,
I think we don't care because we would just rather not know about it and then it must not really be happening, right?
Well, yeah. And this, the secrecy of these things get more and more complex. Most recently in the Reagan or in the Trump years, or the new policy is they're not letting anybody know where they're bombing anymore. Not even letting know anything, nothing. Uh-huh. Can't even, prior to this, they would say how many they had in a certain area. Then people on the ground go and correspond with the deaths section. Nothing now, nothing. Nothing. We all has to be done without the help of the government. It is sick. Absolutely.
Indeed.
Yeah.
We'll just have to keep on trying to make people aware, I guess.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, it's just you just do what you have to do. Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us each week and this week, and I'll talk to you next time.
God bless. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. God bless.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's been another long week in Moon Rock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. The following is part of a former resident of Moon Rock Lake, a story that happened a while ago, but perhaps it still has resonance in today's world. Democratic candidate Joe Coffey went to speak in a big school auditorium to a group of Democrats. Joe got up and saw himself in slow motion walking up the steps to the crowd's applause. He wished for a railing. Reached the shiny wood stage, headed for the podium, safe haven. His shoes clicked on the wood stage floor. Coffey felt the presence of the people at the long folding table on his left and a sea of upturned white faces on his right. He shook the MC's hand and moved toward the blonde wood podium. Joe placed his papers, adjusted the mic, and looked up to his right where Jane would be, but saw only dark shadows under the balcony overhang area. Well, hello? He tapped the mic. Is this on? Smile. My wife and I, Jane, she's back over there somewhere. Jane must have stood and waved because some of the others applauded and waved to her. A while back, long story short, it was a time of great personal struggle, and uncertainty. I think we were on our way somewhere. I don't think we ever got there. Joe adjusted the microphone, grabbed the sides of the podium as he'd seen the governor do. We stopped at a motel, watched the Tiananmen Square crisis unfold on the television. It was also a time of the destruction of the Berlin Wall, the release of Mandela, and later the election of Clinton. He began to make eye contact as he read his speech. Along with others, I hope for the better, for a peace dividend in the United States that would give hope to the poor. Never came. Those in places of power who make money from military procurement could breathe a sigh of relief that it was deemed prudent that the United States military remain unnaturally strong. My sister in Columbus, with 8 children to raise on her own, could find a way to get by, our leader said. The military contractors would not have to. We have schools in Mount Liberty, Mount Carl, and Mount Dorothy, and Mount Jennifer, all around the district, that need fixing. We've made staff cuts at our school. Many school boards are making the same sorts of heart-wrenching decisions for lack of money. Joe looked up, surprised as fuck that the people were listening. And yet, we continue to build state and federal prisons at a rapid rate. The United States incarcerates a higher percentage of its population than any nation on earth. State governments invariably spend more on prisons and jails than on colleges and universities. Went to my first newspaper interview in Mount Brittany, the reporter said my ideas were out there. At least he knew that's what his readers would think. I know what he meant, but nothing great is accomplished without ideals, without dreams, without putting forth proposals that at first seem really out there. It is not failure, but a low aim that is the crime. It's a mistake to regard idealism as a sentimental weakness. Joe put a touch of bass to his voice. He heard his voice going out. He knew where he was. Willed himself not to think about it. Those quotes can't come from the early Wilson era when providing for the poor while seeking to limit the reach of the rich and powerful were talked about openly. Today, liberal is a swear word. Joe looked at his audience and paused. He shifted his feet, then put pressure on his hands on the sides of the podium. A portion of his brain imagining the podium pitching forward into the crowd. The real obscenity is the way political parties and politicians will stick their fingers into the air to check the wind and then sprint in that direction. I'm a Democrat because John Kennedy was a Democrat. My mother and father were Catholics and Democrats. Well, actually, my dad was a Catholic and Democrat because my mom was. That's the way it works many times. Party affiliation passed across the breakfast table. On the first day ever of school, my kindergarten teacher, Miss Cole, wrote in gigantic yellow flaky letters on the blackboard, the size of that neon signboard on Times Square, President John F. Kennedy. Then we prayed for Kennedy in our third grade classroom with Sister Ellen on the day he was shot. Before that day, we thought the world was nice, that presidents were perfect, people in leadership had our best interests in mind. Since that time, we found out different, but the ideal remains. The governor, seated below, leaned to whisper something to the other candidate, Joe's opponent, who in turn tilted right to whisper to his wife, who laughed out loud and looked up at Joe Coffey. I did not choose to run because I suddenly felt qualified. I just realized that I wish politicians, newspaper reporters, and news anchors talked about issues the way I wanted them to be talked about, as if they thought we had a brain in our head. Jane cheered with half a dozen others in the audience. She had not seen Joe's speech because she demanded he write it himself. Nobody comes around and asks you if you want to bomb Iraq or Kosovo or Afghanistan, whether you want 30 new federal prisons built this year. Nobody asks you if you want your son forced to sign up for military induction. Nobody asks you. So sometimes you just have to tell them how you feel. The state Democratic Party chairman leaned across the table to the county Democratic Party chair. "Where did you get this fool?" he asked. The county chair shrugged his shoulders. Another reporter asked me what I thought about health care and Social Security. I said I did not know. She said I had to know. I said I did not. Social Security, Medicare, minimum wage, those are all important issues. The environment, immigration, all very important. There are 30 other important issues we could name. But until we come to grips with our idolatry of the military, the rest is secondary. Joe watched as the state chairman loudly pushed his chair back to stand and walk down the steps, up the aisle, and out the door. Joe began his next sentence. Reporters asked me why I am running. Well, do you remember way back, just after the Columbine tragedy, President Clinton asked our young people to find nonviolent ways to solve their problems? Well, that was while President Clinton and the rest of us adults were bombing Yugoslavia every morning, afternoon, and night. Our children are watching us every step we take, and they're down there low with a great perspective to be able to really see which direction we go. Joe began to speak slower, responding to a note he'd scribbled in the margin. "Go slow, stupid." He read a voice, perhaps his own, told him he could do this. "This administration is dominated and directed by wealth and for the accumulation of wealth. I believe that democracy has so far disappeared in the United States that no two evils exist. There's but one evil party with two names, and it will be elected despite all I can do or say." That's W.E.B. Du Bois, co-founder of the NAACP, in 1956, saying why he would not vote. Many now take that option. We need to have variety, choice, and fire for democracy to work. The governor excused himself, waited for his wife to stand, then waved to the crowd as they walked away. The governor shook hands as he made his way up the middle aisle. "I think it is important and healthy to have at least one nobody in this race, and I claim that distinction. If I can be up here, you can be up here too. We should be excited about the process, not resigned to its ultimate uselessness. It is true that you almost have to be a contract lawyer to figure out the difference between the Democrat and Republican parties. It shouldn't be that way. Politicians want to say nice things, the right things, in order to get elected. And when we get in, we'll really shake things up," we whisper. "Well, you can see what Clinton did. He bailed out. Anyone with eyes or a heart can see what Obama did." Someone groaned in the mid-left section of the crowd. Joe noticed movement around him, a general impatience for his speech to be over. If there was a reason to impeach President Clinton, it was not sex under an antique desk. It was the bombing of Iraq, the continued bombing of Iraq, the continued sanctions against Iraq costing millions of lives, many of them children. It was the welfare reform bill that underlined our disdain for the poor. It was the 1996 crime bill that allocated $8 billion for new prisons. It was the attack and slaughter of the Branch Davidians at Waco. It was the murder of Randy Weaver's wife and son. It was the bombing of Afghanistan and Sudan in the summer of 1998. It was his continued support for the drug war and the use of the death penalty. A few people applauded. Others rustled paper. Joe stood on one leg, turned over his last page to find the rest of his speech. But we're not going to hear it tonight. We're going to hear it next time. That's the news from Moon Rock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs. All the journalists and Democrats are cowards. And I lost my place, but this has been the New American Dream radio show. We thank you for joining us tonight. And we hope you'll be back next week and every week. We apologize for our mistakes, and we'll try to do better next time. And we hope that, I think we had some great guests, and I really appreciate Mike sticking it out, even though he's got a cold. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
And thank you, Chuck, for all you did to make the show happen. And thanks to our guests, Thomas Wertman, Jim Fetzer, Richard Flamer, Phil Ferruzio, and Frank Cordero. Please visit the New American Dream website, newdream.us, for the archives. Also, Penn Magazine, P-E-N-N magazine.us. If you'd like to donate to the Des Moines Catholic Worker, write to the Phil Bergen House, 713 Indiana Avenue, Des Moines, Iowa, 50314. Also, the Chiapas Project, care of Holy Family Catholic Church, 1715 Izzard Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68102. And so good night to my friends, Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. Good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Don Hochsprung. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Muhammad Atta. Good night, Omar Mateen. Good night, Noah Posner. Good night, Crystal Campbell. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Of tyranny. You've come to fight as free men. And free men you are. What will you do with that freedom? Will you fight?
We will run.
And we will live. Aye. Fight and you may die. Run and you'll live. At least a while. And dying in your beds many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?
The future is uncertain, I know this. Death is inevitable, I know this. But one thing is certain, as free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion, and as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
Is your data safe? Do you have the necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation? Is survival and gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive.